What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It is the day after the national champions were crowned in college football, and the usual suspects are present and accounted for, and here at the Palatial Gal Media Studios, ready to entertain you, hopefully, for the next 3 hours. Nick is behind the glass, Barry to my right, and yours truly, Joel, here with you. So fasten your seatbelts and take us along for the ride. We appreciate you folks as we get into this thing. Fellas, what it is, what is up?
What to do? What's going on?
I want to start this show right away by saying shout out to Cody Stutes.
Why?
Because whenever you get advice from a big guy when it comes to food,
oh,
you expect that advice to be really good. And he
so
nailed
like
it.
Eric Sandler, because he is the foremost food critic in the city of Houston, Texas.
I'll be over here if you need me.
I'm just asking a question, right?
I'm sticking with my, you do yours.
Okay.
I'm just talking Cody because I know Cody. And I can, Cody suggested, remember last week while you were gone, we ended up talking about Chick-fil-A because he was boycotting them for whatever reason. I don't even know why. But he gave me some advice on the nuggets. And because I tried to get the grilled nuggets because they're healthier and then get the sauce. He said, bro, get the buffalo sauce that they have. It's only like 25 calories. Add some ranch, just a little touch of ranch to it. It's so much better than the barbecue sauce. I did that. It's amazing. I did that today. Got the grilled nuggets. I hate the grilled nuggets, but you got to do it. It's healthier. 0 points on Weight Watchers, all that blah, blah, blah. Added that touch of ranch to the buffalo sauce. Outstanding.
Okay.
So shout out to him. Anytime a big person gives you advice on food, take it. That's just the takeaway from today.
Okay. See, so, like, I already know Eric Sandler's not he's such a big dude. He's not going to Chick-fil-A because he's hoity-toity. He's like, everyone knows he is the end-all, be-all for food in Houston. So he's going to go to, like, some chef doo-doo-doo does his nuggets extraordinaire or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well.
Because I had to get in. I was here like at 9 this morning uh-huh. because I had to take the dogs into the vet, 4 of them.
And good times.
So I'm driving around my old neighborhood in Midtown, everything like that. And then I come in here and I just start talking to Eric Sandler like, dude, when did they develop and turn that Burger King into a Shake Shack? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, we did that. And then we went into Midtown and then they did that. And they had this wine fusion and and he was just breaking it all down. I don't have to go to Google. I just ask Eric and he'll break
Shake
it down.
Shake Shack sounds good.
Yeah, they opened up a Shake Shack on Westheimer.
That sounds good.
I have never had one personally, but I have heard you and I think we're talking about this yesterday, but I had heard about Best Burgers because someone got the burger yesterday at Twin Peaks, and I had heard Five Guys.
Yes.
And you said Smash Burger.
Smash.
And then I have also heard
I'm partial to Smash because of the fries, though.
And you said that.
Yeah,
and then I have also – I could be off base on this because I'm not a huge burger guy, but – Shake Shack is also a good burger.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's
we I think we did that at the Minute Maid. They yep. have a Shake Shack.
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
And we got in line and we waited and waited and waited.
Yeah, because they don't have enough
waited.
They admit to it. They don't have enough
people
grills
bars, yeah.
or equipment to cover the demand.
At Minute Maid. And yeah. I can say unequivocally, without exception, it was not worth the wait.
Yeah, when it's that long, it has to be extraordinarily good. If it was just a 5 or 10 minute wait, it's not a bad burger at all. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely worth a try, especially now that it's on Westheimer. It's not too far from us.
Also, you know, I'm not reading all the text of your best burger. We've been through this a million times on the show.
Yeah, we don't need to do all that. I just asked a question.
Don't start sending me, try this, try it. We've covered all that. This is just a discussion of these three.
Yeah, I drove by and just saw, I was shocked that they were actually building one right there in such a convenient location.
So. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So what are the dogs? Are they all sprained their ACLs?
No, these are all, this is just simple, like, shots and...
Oh, I probably should do that more with our cat. We just don't do that. How often do you take your dog to the vet?
First of all, the vets are no dummies. I mean, they send you, like, reminder postcards, like, every 2 weeks going, you know, you're due for... And I'm like, how much is that going to cost?
You do them all at once, though?
This time I did 4.
God bless it.
Yeah. And believe me, I took the HOV. I was telling Nick... So
does that count?
No. I paid the toll. I took the HOV and paid the toll. You know, because driving
hat,
in,
put a hat
I'm like,
on
normally
one of your
when we drive in, there's no need for it.
Right.
But already I was like, well, traffic looks okay coming in from Sugarland, but it could get worse. And then this guy just like swerves into my lane and there's 3 cars in front of me. He like literally takes a crowbar to get between the 2 cars. I'm like, whoa, dude, that wasn't even cool. So then the car behind him gets out of the way, and it's me. And all of a sudden, he just hammers the brakes. And I got to slam on the brakes. I got dogs that are, like, holding on for dear life. And I'm like, what the? And I'm going to go get it. And I realize he has no interest in me because he is swerving into the lane next to him, playing chicken, almost trying to hit the car next to him. And they're going back and forth. And then it's a scene right out of a movie. Another car is upset that he's doing this. They get involved. And I look at these 3 cars going in and out of traffic like the Italian job, and I go, nope, HOV today, that'll be for me. I'm not getting in the middle of all that.
Not risking it.
I've yet to pay for HOV, though.
Like, why?
You don't take it?
Every time I've taken it, I had a passenger. I've never taken it to pay. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
I feel like you'd be the rebel that would just do it on the toll
totally
side
agree.
Of the non-toll
side. Nah, because that will come back to you. You can't dodge that. You can't dodge
Joel
that.
Put a hat on one of his dogs and was like, that's a person.
And they believed me.
Put a ski
that
cap.
That was the better
put
part
a ski
of it.
Cap and shove a cigar
they
in their mouth.
They have busted people with the dummies.
Yeah,
and the sex
that's
dolls.
That's true.
They asked me if Tyler travels with me all the time because the dog just looked like it had a beard. It was fine. No, because they will get you, though, because at the worst times, like, if you're going to be an HPD guy and you're going to nail people for using the HOV without 2+, right? Do that at, like, 1 o'clock. Do it. No, they always do it for 5 o'clock rush hour, and then they stop the car so that the whole HOV line is either hindered or completely blocked, and you're going, dumbass, you got 300 cars behind you. Can't you just pull that thing over?
Just get out of the way.
But they don't.
I hate it when you get on there and there's a bus or something. You're just like, damn it, why am I on here?
Yeah.
If I could have sat on this or sat over there and done it for free, I get angry about that. Or you get passed by a scooter.
I forgot how bad traffic is in the morning. If like when I used to take that every day
We're
to
spoiled.
Go to the Rockets,
yeah.
We are so totally spoiled because I was so glad I took the HOV because like once you got inside the Beltway, it was literally a parking lot all the way into downtown. I'm like, oh, thank God.
What time was this?
This was between 8:30, 8:45.
Wow.
Yeah.
Somebody just texted and said the people behind the HOV are thinking of making it a 3, minimum of 3 now instead of 2.
I've heard that.
Really?
Because it's going to get to the point where, like it is in LA. Well, it's literally, the first time I landed in LA, I got my rental car, couldn't go in the HOV lane. They call it the Diamond Lane over there in Los Angeles. Mm. I was moving faster than the Diamond Lane.
Really?
Yeah. And it's going to get to that point here in Houston unless they do something about it.
It kind of already is.
Yeah. There's going to be times where the HOV lane is not going to be as fast.
When I leave to go to San Antonio for shows, after the show, I get on and it's just as bad. Trust me. It doesn't move either.
Yeah.
Here's the other problem, right? So if you're just doing the toll part, I don't mind paying, but let me do it. I hate the fact there are certain times of the day they don't let you pay the toll.
Right.
Regardless. And then it's a racket because if you're leaving downtown and you leave between 4 and 5, you're okay. Between 5 and 6, you're not allowed. 6 o'clock on, it's $4.50.
That's crazy. Is that for the whole run, though?
That's the whole run.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's not too bad, I guess.
But if you had to do that every day, and so cars will put their hazards on.
Every day.
But the cars will put their hazards on and pull over into the emergency lane and wait till 5:01. and then be the first one on, but so that they make sure that they don't get drilled for a ticket, but that they don't care if they're in the way of like a possible accident or anything.
Right.
They just put their hazards on and go, I'm waiting till 501.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I take the Hardy every day.
How much
here
is that?
And, pay here for and it? Back. Yeah.
How much is that?
Like, I get charged
it's
my...
probably 10 a day.
No, it's
I'm
only...
I'm talking about round trip.
Maybe $6-7 a day. Yeah. But my wife...
Really?
My wife takes it, too. Yeah.
It's you like expense
a,
that every month?
It's like $1.75. No. Hell no. It's just me getting to work. It's like $1.75, I think, per toll.
Damn.
So it's and over
Hardy $3.
Toll,
that, maybe, that's maybe usually... I've never been on the Hardy Toll Road where there's a lot of traffic. Now, there might be, but I've never... So one thing I can appreciate about the Hardy Toll Road is that I've never been on it when there's a bunch of traffic.
It's not horrible, especially the time we come in.
I'm sure 5 o'clock.
Yeah, you know, in the mornings, it can be really bad.
Yeah.
Like when I had my corporate gig, you know, I would have to be at work at 8. Yeah, it could be really bad. But when I come in, there's no traffic. It's 45 could be a little bit congested, but it's nice, man. It's just, it gets expensive. I feel like I have my Amex on rebill for them. And I feel like I get a charge like every 10 days for $40.
Yeah. So I do the same thing.
Me
with
and
the
my
easy,
wife use it. It gets expensive.
I get the updates on Easy Tag. But again, because we do have it easy from the standpoint of traffic, I don't get the updates like you do anymore. Because I only need it if, God forbid, Nick and I are talking to each other on the way going, bro, you seeing this accident? Are we going to make it to work on time? And then we hit the HOV.
I mean, for the most part,
like
it's not
a traffic
bad.
Couple. That's sweet.
It is.
Only if it's like really bad. Only if it's like really, really bad. Because then I could like get off 59 Whoa. And, well, you guys are 3 years old, by the way.
Well, 4.5. But still.
But yeah.
Well,
I mean,
By the way, we are like the married couple. Because the other thing is on the way home every day, we will let each other in. And we will like,
oh my God.
We will like open up spots in the lane for each other so that we can keep going.
You're basically having traffic sex.
Although we haven't done that in a while.
Opening up holes
for
each other.
No, not in a while, but when the time is, it's necessary, we do it.
Y'all have traffic sex. Just open up holes for each other to get into. Okay.
You call it what you want. We call it an effective relationship.
fastest way for you to get off the freeway.
The means to an end,
yes.
So to speak. There you go. And with that, we are off and running. Usual Suspects HRP listener line open for you. You can call or text the number 713-780-3776 and reach the show. And, of course, you want to reach us individually or in a group effort. On Twitter, it is at the producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, and at Barry is funny. We'll be back with a whole lot more. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
A third throw in three plays. It's intercepted. And the Tigers are going the other way. A.J. Terrell with a pick six. Tua is fooled, Kirk, and the Tigers made him pay.
And there it was, the beginning of the end, if you are an Alabama fan, as the Clemson Tigers took it to Alabama last night, win the national championship. It's now 2-2 between the two teams.
Best of seven,
one
right?
And two.
Doing a best of seven series?
Well, that's what the Cavs and the Warriors do, so
that's
we're
right.
on par for that.
Might as well.
Still... Was it, I would say, must-see TV. It was a good game to watch, but I kept thinking Alabama was going to climb its way back.
Was it a good game to watch because you were deep down excited that Alabama was catching a
natural
whooping?
So let's put it here right now. I thought somehow Alabama would still cover it. You picked it right. But at the same time, I told you yesterday, and I've always said, I just despise Alabama, and I enjoyed the ass whooping they were taking. And yeah, the more the deeper the hole got, yeah, the more I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was right away when they did the interception, and then I was like, uh-oh, that's a bad sign for Bama. Clemson was not. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Colts Texans. Clemson came out, played physical up front, let them know that they weren't scared, hit them in the mouth.
Punched them in the mouth, yeah.
Did it a couple of times in a row. It's like Bama could not stop them in the first half. Every time they got the ball, it felt like they went down and scored. Trevor Lawrence, the moment wasn't too big for him. And Clemson had the better defense, and it was just not, it wasn't even close. It was,
and they ran the ball.
It wasn't a route, but it was damn near for a national championship. It was about as close to a route as you would get.
But okay, so here's the thing, too. Let me ask you guys this. So it's like the Belichick thing with the Patriots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Saban has such an arrogance about him in kind of a crotchety way that it helps people that's just kind of an average fan to hate him. Doesn't it seem like it's just the exact opposite? Like, if Clemson is truly going to be the biggest competition for Bama and could overtake them for being, like, number one and you know, best recruiting classes and all that, the way Dabo goes about his business, it just seems like a humble, aw shucks kind of thing where people really are drawn to him as opposed to the opposite with Alabama.
I tweeted it last night.
Did you?
During the post game, I said, I don't want to like Dabo Swinney, but damn it, I really do.
Yeah.
I really like that dude. He's a likable guy. You want to hate him because, you know, when you get a team that dominates like Clemson and Bama, and there's just something about Dabo Swinney that draws you to him, that makes you want to root for him, even though he's at, because he was so humble in that post game where he was just like, if I can do it, anyone can do it. If our school can do it, anyone can do it. It was amazing, man. And it was good for them. So
Here's a little bit of the post on the field.
There are a few coaches in any sport who show more joy than you do. How do you describe the joy of the moment?
Well, that's been my word all year. And I just tried to be intentional with that. And, for me personally, joy comes from focusing on Jesus, others, and yourself. And, man, I mean, you know, very few people. There's so many great coaches that are so deserving of a moment like this that never get the chance to experience it. And to get to do it once and now to get to do it again, you know, it's a blessing.
So let me say this. There's two things to this. One, Saban doesn't like a lot of coaches, and he doesn't hide his emotions well, and it's like Belichick. It's the quick handshake and don't talk to me kind of mentality. So ESPN got the both of them in a room leading up to the game last night, and they genuinely had conversation, and they genuinely seemed to like each other. I guess they have summer homes or vacation homes in the same area, and even Dabo was like then, well, you know, Nick's the one that's got the one with all the fences around it and the security, and any redneck can come up to my front door if they want and just join us for a beer. And I liked that, but the best answer out of the interview was, he were like, you know, you're playing against Alabama, and the stresses that go with this, and what keeps you up at night? And he just flat out said, you guys may think this is just a line, but I'm too blessed to be stressed. There's too many other things going on in this world and in life to be worried about. If I'm just a football coach coaching in football games, I've got too good of a life to worry about and complain about. And I was like, God, dude is... And then what was better, that I caught an ESPN, I don't know if it was a 30 for 30 or whatever it was, but they were talking about how he got the job. He was like the receivers coach. And they either fired or abruptly got rid of one reason that the coach left. And they called him into a room. And they're like, you want this thing? Because it's yours. And you can do whatever you want with it. But when we open this door, you got to go. And he's like freaking out. And he's calling his wife. And he didn't know what to do. And then they interviewed him after the fact. And he's like, and I mean, I got to fire guys that I didn't know what I was going to have to do and fire him. And I didn't know if I could do all this. And you're just like, it draws you to the guy even more and goes, he's just like an average good old dude. And that's why you root for him.
Yeah, and he's the opposite of Nick Saban.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's just a likable guy. Yeah, pretty cool. It made a great subplot, but you could tell that they were, you know, friends, and they, you know, shook each other's hands afterwards, so that was cool to see. And he's a good football coach, too, man.
No doubt.
You got to give it to him. He built that program up. I just love that he was, you know, he did the right things. He said the right things, and I tell you what, he had his team ready to go. That was a very well prepared football team. That was a hungry football team. And again, you're talking about a young back in Etienne. You're talking about a freshman receiver in Justin Ross, a freshman quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. This was a young offense. I mean, this was your three star at the skill positions are freshmen and sophomores in a national title game against the most dominant program in the nation year in and year out, and it was like nothing to them. I mean, Trevor Lawrence damn near had a perfect game. Yeah. 20 of 32, 347 yards, three touchdowns, a 92.8 QBR. That's literally a perfect game.
And here's the thing. We talked about this, right? We talked about it from a Texas perspective, how important the offensive line is. But Trevor Lawrence was as daunted and highly reputable as Alabama's defense was basically unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to worry about being under duress and worry about people in his face on every play. And the thing is, on the flip side, this was everybody talks about how unflappable Tua was or is. Boy, I'll tell you what, because not only did he get hit, but some of those hits, like the blitzes coming from the safeties and the defensive backs that got him around the knees and got him low, you could tell that he had his head on a swivel and he was different than he's been maybe ever at Alabama.
Yeah, and on the flip side of that, man, how stoic was Trevor Lawrence in the pocket? I mean, the fact that he would stay in there, he took some big shots too. And you know, just he was amazing in the pocket. At one point they even pointed out how he moved up in the pocket,
yes,
like
that's
a professional.
What I was gonna talk about.
And it was something else, man.
And I think this too, the same way I'm talking about Tua and the fact that he was kind of rattled because they hadn't seen this all year,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that the receivers were going through the same thing. They hadn't seen a defense like this before because Tua made some really good passes that were dropped too, where he threw a laser at a receiver and was like worried about being hit or for whatever the reason dropped the ball. And the play that you alluded to, that one where he stepped way up in the pocket and then threw just a laser beam and it put it right where it had to be for a receiver, you're like, this kid right now, if he came out, and I don't care how defensive loaded this draft is, this kid would, someone would trade up and make him the number one overall pick.
I feel like it was an off game for Nick Saban, too. The going for it on fourth down so many times and the fake field
the
goal.
The fake field goal was ridiculous.
I just didn't understand from a coaching perspective what his thoughts were. Maybe you felt like, and I don't know, I didn't see any post games with him, but I got the sense in the way that he managed the game and coached the game that he realized that, you know what, that football team across the field from us is probably better than us. We can't just punt the ball away because it's Alabama. It's the Alabama defense. You would think that it's fourth down. You know what? Yeah, we're down, but our defense will hold them. I'll punt the ball away. He just kept going for it, and the Clemson defense was so good that they would stop them. And it was just, I don't know. It was a weirdly managed game by Nick Saban. I felt like one of his worst football games that I've seen him coach in a long time.
And it did have the feel like whoever had the ball last would win the game early. Like they were scoring back and forth. Everybody was scoring points. So I think that's what he kind of freaked out about. Like if we punt, then we're screwing ourselves.
Yeah, but that's the Bama defense. That's my point. Like you've got the number one defense in the country, and you're scared to give the ball back to them because you know that you're looking across the field going, they're better than us.
Yeah, damn. I don't know. I don't know if Saban's the kind of egomaniac that would never say they're better than us, but he had to realize they were on equal,
he coached
equal,
like it.
Equal ground.
Yeah, he coached like it.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did. He was, I don't know. It was a weird, I don't know what was going through his head, but I don't know.
All right, we can get to the fact that the early polls are out already for next season, so you can get an idea and a preview of what might be to come in college football. But we've got lots more to get to, and if you want to get in here on the national championship game or otherwise, 713-780-3776, HRP Listener Line, or hit us up on Twitter. It is the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5. The money's on the other
side. Looking for something to do this weekend? Visit culturemap.com to find out everything going on in the city. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, half hour into the big show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. We had been talking about the national championship game and the outcome. The whole Trevor Lawrence, Jeff Spicoli thing has been kicked around as well in terms of He looks, every time I see him, I do think of Jeff Spicoli and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but I can't get over the poise the kid has.
Yeah, he's cool, man. I mean, I didn't realize the story. They talked about him starting his high school team as a 14-year-old freshman in high school and starting all 4 years. He's got it. He's going to be playing on Sunday. There's no doubt about that. That is, he is destined to be a professional quarterback.
And he, high school-wise, broke all of Deshaun's records.
Mm-hmm.
So
probably going to break all of his Clemson records,
yeah,
or whatever, you know, his personal best were. Somebody, because I had mentioned it was damn near a blowout. They said 28 points isn't a blowout. I mean, it's a rout, but to me, a blowout is, it's, I don't know, is what Army did to U of H. Yeah. That's more of a blowout.
That's a pounding blow. That's just embarrassing. I mean, that's an embarrassment.
Yeah, this was that second half, I mean, they got shut. Alabama got shut out in the second half. Also kind of telling, too. And then they bring in Hurts, which I thought was an interesting move, just to see if he could get something going. I didn't know if Tua was hurt or if that was just a, hey, this isn't working, let's try something new. Maybe he gives us a spark like what happened in previous games. And I don't know, man. I do know you mentioned the polls. And
yeah,
I'm amazed that – and I realize Clemson's going to lose a lot on defense. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you saw their offensive star power, because their defense kept them in it, but that offense, I mean, I guess you could say the defense won them the game. Their defense stepped up really big. I felt like they had the better defense. I just thought it would be closer. I really did. I said the difference in the game to me was I felt like Clemson was a little bit better on defense, but these two teams were evenly matched. They didn't look evenly matched. First of all, they didn't look evenly matched at all. But I'm getting back to you're saying next year the polls come out, and I saw Bama is considered number one going into the polls next year. That's crazy to me.
No, I saw the poll I saw had Clemson one.
Poll I saw had Bama one, Clemson two, and I'm like, how can you, this team just put an ass whooping on Alabama? Yes, they're going to lose some defensive players, but they're bringing back their freshman quarterback and receiver and sophomore running back. How do you not give them the due respect that they deserve by just trouncing what people thought was the best team in college football? Put them at one in the polls, but the poll I saw had Bama one, which I think is ridiculous. I'm not saying Bama shouldn't be two, three, or whatever. Definitely two, but...
Well, that has to be based on recruiting, right? And how many five stars and all of that, because otherwise, exactly what you said is exactly why everybody should be playing for number two and below that, because you're right. When you've got a true freshman...
Mm-hmm.
Throwing to a true freshman, and as like you said, and a sophomore tailback that, look, had three touchdowns in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the best thing about this for college football is the gap has finally closed. Everybody thought Georgia was going to do this and Kirby Smart, and that was going to be it, and Georgia was going to close the gap.
Next year.
But now you've got three teams that look like they are loaded up for the long haul, and they're going to continue to haul them in. It's just a matter of who's going to be the fourth team.
So here's the poll that I saw. It's from USA Today.
Okay.
So their early top 25 for 2019. Bama 1, Clemson 2, Georgia 3, Oklahoma 4, Texas 5.
I've heard Texas climbing.
6, Ohio State, 7, Michigan, 8, LSU, 9, Washington, and rounding out your top 10... Gig them, Texas A&M.
That's, man, for the state of Texas, that is good news to have all those teams back. All right, so
any jump out at you that you feel like? I mean, Bama, I feel like they should have been two. Clemson one, Bama two, Georgia three. Totally agree with that. I don't know if I would have Oklahoma four as bad as that defense is, unless they get a lot better in the offseason and get some recruits and beef up that defense. I don't know that I would have them. I would probably move Texas and Ohio State ahead of them.
Yeah, because Ohio State, again, and so ESPN had several different columns, and the one that they had, they actually used the Vegas odds, which obviously we know give you a pretty good indication of what the people think about who really is loaded up. They have Clemson 1, Bama 2, Ohio State 3, tied with Georgia, and then Michigan, Oklahoma, Texas, Nebraska,
okay,
Washington, Florida, Notre Dame. I understand that everybody thinks that Scott Frost is going to turn around the Huskers, but to have that kind of a jump from a team that was that bad this last year,
yeah,
and only one recruiting class.
This poll has Nebraska at 21.
Yeah, see, I don't see it.
I could see that more than top 10.
And then to say that Michigan is in the top five, you have as good an eye on this as anybody. But I look at it and go, Michigan seems like they're not even in the same ballpark as at least the three teams that we talked about, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia, let alone Ohio State.
I'm with you. I think that the gap is closing between the top three, top five. I do believe that. Mm-hmm. And Michigan played pretty well most of the year. They were, you know, just missed making the playoffs.
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen in the offseason with them, but Ohio State, it's going to be interesting to see how they are with getting a new quarterback, getting a new coach. How's that going to happen? But they're loaded, man. And again, Texas, I think, is loaded, and they're confident. And I think the one team, so like Ohio State, Michigan, Texas, I could argue any of those in that order after Georgia, Clemson, Alabama. I'd be happy to argue with that. The one thing I don't think is I don't know that Oklahoma is going to be as good as these other teams because they're not as well-rounded. Offensively, they might be the best offensive team in the top 10. But because their defense is so bad, it showed once they got to the playoffs, I wouldn't trust them against these other teams because if you can get a couple stops on Oklahoma, they're done because they can't stop you. So I might move them down and have that group of three or four up there with LSU even included in that mix along with Michigan, Ohio State, and Texas. So that's to me, that's kind of there's that tier one, which is Bama, Clemson, Georgia. Tier two would be Michigan, Ohio State, Texas, LSU, and Oklahoma. Oklahoma I would throw in there, but at the bottom of that tier.
Yeah, you know, the thing for me with LSU is too, and I had a lot of LSU friends sending me messages since the game got over, going, the one thing I can't believe is how many of those Louisiana players got away.
Yeah. I don't know how many Texas players get away on a daily basis. Yeah,
true. And you know, even Florida now, when you look at Florida State, and I heard the guys talking about it this morning, they were talking about like dynasties, and they didn't think that Alabama had done enough long enough to be a true dynasty. Mm. When you look at like Bobby Bowden's Florida State teams, did it for like over a decade, man. Top five finishes,
yeah,
and all the guys that they produced to the NFL and runs like that. But when you look at it and you overall take a look at the big picture, man, I mean. Yeah, I mean, Florida State, the mighty have fallen, and then there's how far Florida State has fallen. And, you know, there's people out there now that are asking, how long is it going to take to get them back to respectability? When we talk about how strong these top three teams are, what's your definition of respectability? Because it's going to be a long, long time before they crack that top three like those three teams right now.
Yeah.
Right?
It's looking like it.
It might be. It's possible. I mean, did you think Baylor would be in the situation that it is? I mean, I think they exceeded expectations coming off all that controversy. I just feel like with Florida State, because of its past history as being a brand in college football, I don't think it'll take that long. It's possible that they just fall off the face of the earth and they never come back. But I think a program like Florida State could bounce back easier, especially when you have programs coming off of controversy and they're still able to recruit and they're still able to get decent players. So I just think it depends on the situation. If you get the right coach and the right recruiters,
it's really Taggart's out there in Florida State, yeah. Right?
See, that's the thing. I was going to say, Nick, and you hit it, and Barry just touched on it too. It's getting the right coach, because you look at it. Bowden had that great run, and then he just started to kind of like fade, whether it was his age or whatever it was. And then Jimbo came in, and Jimbo got him another national title, and it was like, dude, now you got the right coach. But the fact that Jimbo left, and the reasons why he said he left, which was the fact that he couldn't get the state money to have the same kind of resources as all these other teams to compete in the top 10, top 20, and the fact he couldn't pay his coaches what he wanted to pay him, and that's what other teams were paying him. That's what I think is also going to hold Florida State back, is getting, because it's a state school, getting the state money and getting all that money and getting the state to commit to it. Because you look at it, now he came to the Aggs, and we know how great those facilities are.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already showing what he can do. He's already got him, as you said, top 10, regardless of which poll you're looking at. He's got him ranked very highly, and he's got a hell of a recruiting class coming in. That's why he got out of there.
And you mentioned Baylor. I think Baylor would still be as strong as they are today if it wasn't for the scandal. If it wasn't for
Art
Briles, they would still be. So I think you're right, Nick. It can be turned around, and dynasties can happen. I mean, like what Clemson wasn't necessarily a dynasty until Dabo got him there. So it's going to be interesting how – how big does the gap get between the haves and the have-nots too in college football? Because if you've just got 5 or 10 teams that are out there getting all the recruits, this could end up being a, hey, you know what, we might as well just have the just one conference of the top 10 teams. Yeah. It almost seems pointless.
I mean, it's possible. It's just difficult. I mean, look at Penn State.
Yeah.
You had Bill O'Brien, when he became the head coach of Penn State, he had clauses in his contract that said if there was any more sanctions that came down, that he would get paid more money. And so he knew the sanctions were coming down, and he put that in his contract. Bill O'Brien knew that he wasn't going to be the guy to turn that program around, but he was kind of like the interim coach until they got over that big storm.
But he Barry's point, used it as a stepping stone.
Absolutely.
Because
why wouldn't you?
Because he refigured out that he knew that was coming, but he also knew he didn't have experience as a head coach, and he got the one recruit he needed. He got Hackenberg, and then as soon as he had a chance, he got the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, and that's what he should have done. I mean, he knew that was going to be a temporary gig. Just like who was the Wake Forest coach that took over Baylor for like a year? He knew that wasn't going to last very long. I forgot his name, but he used to be the Wake Forest football coach, and he took over the Baylor gig after all that controversy. They knew he wasn't going to be the guy. He took that gig. He got paid. He left. You know, at that point in his life, though, I forgot his name. That wasn't a stepping stone situation. He had already kind of proved himself as a coach. Bill O'Brien, yeah, that was kind of a huge step up from him.
Yeah, for him it was a swan song, and now you've got, in Baylor's case, is it Rule? Because Rule's being considered for the Jets job. They love everything all the adversity he's had to get over and overcome to do what he did to get Baylor even in a bowl game this year, and now he's interviewing for the Jets job.
Speaking of that, somebody said with all the success Dabo's had, is the NFL going to be knocking down his door?
I saw a lot of tweets this morning inferring that Bill should go and he should come to the Texans and he should do this and that.
That's always going to happen when you get the hot coach in college football. And if you're Dabo Sweeney, do you leave? Do you really want to go?
Nope.
You're sitting on top of the world.
No, this is...
Why on earth would you give all that up to go deal with spoiled millionaires that now you've got to start over and prove yourself again? I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Because look at the run Saban's had. If you do it and do it right and do it well, especially in a community like Tuscaloosa with Alabama, like because you're the only game in town with Clemson, you look at what Patino did. I mean, Patino did it at several places, but what Calipari did, he did it at Memphis. He did it at small schools, but they were the only game in town. And he did it, still doing at Kentucky, where if you get that niche where you're known as the guy that's going to make you the best pro prospect and give you the best chances to win every year, and you don't have pro teams and other things to compete with, you need to ride that way, because you're not going anywhere and you're rolling in cash.
You get treated better like the mayor in a lot of these towns.
No doubt about it.
Titan Hugo said, hey, suspects, can we send a birthday shout out to my daughter, Sophia? She turns 5 today.
Happy birthday, Sophia.
Also a loyal listener. So, yeah, happy birthday, Sophia. Appreciate you listening.
And the fact that you can take without having to do earmuffs.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Good for you.
All right. Hey, still going. Hour number one, 3-hour show. Been talking a lot of college football. Got a lot more to get to. Something on your mind you want to get off your chest? Hey, we're here for you. 713-780-3776. HRNP listener line. Call, text, hit us on Twitter. It is the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Jump up and get down.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back! Final segment of the first hour of The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. We were talking a lot in terms of the college game, college football, the game last night, the rankings for next year. I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but now USC has they finally gave in. They've relented and allowed Cliff Kingsbury to interview.
Yeah,
he's interviewing with the Jets, I believe, today, and the Arizona Cardinals. To possibly be their head coach.
It was a bad look for them. I mean, anytime you try to deny coaches the opportunity to get jobs and better themselves, and it's going to be a bad look, and it's going to make other coaches not want to come to your school. And so you don't want to lose these guys, but at the same time, you don't get the Cliff Kingsbury's of the world if you deny them the opportunity to be better coaches somewhere or get better jobs. So it's a catch 22. You know, you gotta let them in and you gotta let them go. And that's just kind of how it's always been in coaching. And good for him. I don't know if I'm an NFL team if I take a risk on a guy like that, but good for him.
Yeah, I think most cases when you see guys dabble in the NFL from college, it's guys that have had success. And you look at a Lincoln Riley and say, look, he competed for a national championship and he held that program together when Stoops stepped away and kept them at the ultimate level competing in the Final Four this year again. And you say, okay, he's been at the very highest level doing it and doing it from a head coaching perspective. When you look at what Cliff Kingsbury has done, he's been the hot name because he's an offensive mind. But in terms of as a head coach with his overall record at Texas Tech and what he's done, he's bounced around. He's never even sniffed Lincoln Riley. Yeah. So you want to put him in charge of a bunch of grown-ass men that aren't going to settle for a bunch of college crap?
5 years of head coaching experience. And that was at the college level.
Yeah.
I don't know if I take a chance.
I'm not either.
He has to be a super personable guy, in my opinion, because it's a complete different dynamic. And if he's good with, like, multimillionaire athletes, then yeah, maybe. But I haven't seen anything that tells me.
He's good with the chicks.
We know that.
Here's his coaching history. Listen, this, you talk about a quick rise. 2008 and 2009, he was the offensive quality control. Okay. 2010, 2011, co-offensive coordinator.
Was that U of H?
Yeah. And also the quarterback's coach. So from 2008 to 2011, he was quality control, co-offensive coordinator. Finally turned over the reins to be an offensive coordinator on his own when he went to A&M for a year. And then, of course, they had the great year there. He gets the head coaching job at Tech. So he spent 5 years as a head coach. And he spent 4 years as a coordinator. Actually, less than that. He spent 3 years as a coordinator, 2 as quality control.
Which is probably a fancy name for a very position.
Yeah,
intern. In that program. He's probably making more than double the money I was making. I'm making, but still.
But I mean, so it's not like he's got this long track record of I was the quarterback's coach, and then I was a coordinator for 5 years and with great success, and then I was a head coach for 6 years. He's a fast riser, and these are the kind of guys that you go, well, we don't want to be last to the party, so teams are going to jump on the opportunity to get him. I just wouldn't be one of those teams. I want him to prove himself.
The other thing you look at when you look at a resume that seems to be that short is the coaching tree. Like, who is he working under? Well, U of H wasn't. It was Sumlin.
Yeah.
So if that's not going to wow NFL guys, right?
No.
So that's not going to be like, oh, yeah, I was a coach under Nick Saban, under Dabo Sweeney, under Bob Stoops. No. Even Urban Meyer. So you look at all that and you say, wow, that's a pretty big leap of faith. If you're going to give a guy like that, which you know with his agent is going to demand 3 to 5 year deal, because you don't want to be like Wilkes in Arizona, although you're getting paid for it, but you got to make sure you've got a safety net because, again, you don't even know how you're going to do coaching grown men.
Yeah, and here's the other problem. He didn't turn around Texas Tech. It wasn't this.
That's what I was getting at his record.
It wasn't this Mike Leach thing where he went in and made them a dominant force in the Big 12. He didn't turn that program around. He did okay at times, but it wasn't like he resurrected and brought Texas Tech to national prominence or anything like that. So I get he might be this bright mind, but I wouldn't take a chance just this early. I mean, maybe make him a quarterback's coach for a team somewhere in the NFL, if that's what you really want, and kind of groom him to be an OC, and a place like Andy Reid might be a great opportunity for him. Okay, come be the quarterback's coach, because Andy Reid's just known for grooming OCs. I don't know
his ego won't let him do that because they're calling him an offensive guru of the new generation.
Yeah,
but here's the other thing.
But the turnover head coaching.
Yeah, because here's the other thing. Now, you can understand the Cardinals making a move like this because from everybody you talk to and everybody you hear things from, the Cardinals organization, from the owner all the way down, is completely so screwed up that it's going to be hard for anybody to succeed. But it also might give you some leeway because of the fact that they know you're just getting off a rookie quarterback who's just getting into the pro game and all this other stuff. So you've got a lot of wiggle room. If he goes to the Jets in that media market... With that scrutiny, and he's the first-time NFL guy with little experience, he's going to get blasted
yeah.
unless they just take the world by storm. And we all know that they don't have the personnel to do that.
By the way, I'm looking at the coaches for Tech. He had a 46.6 winning percentage. He won 46% of his games. That's the worst since Jerry Moore back in 81 to 85.
God, if you thought I was going to get that.
No, but I'm just saying it's been since 80. Tech hasn't been this bad that they were under Kingsbury since 81 to 85 when they were under Jerry Moore. So I get he's a bright mind and maybe that has something to do with Tech, but hell, Tommy Tuberville won 54% of his games. Mike Leach won 66%. 46% is what they're like, yeah, well. And I get it, maybe it was, you know, I hadn't broken it down by year, but damn, that's not great. That's not a great track record. There's a reason he got fired.
And don't you think that his public persona and his likability factor, because between, I kid about the co-eds, but he seemed like the young, kind of hip and cool coach that everybody was drawn to. And I think that they like that because obviously not everybody is knocking down doors to go to Texas Tech. So that kind of built up a little bit to where they didn't want to make a move and a snap decision too quickly. But yeah, from a winning perspective, that's what I was getting at. His record has never knocked the world on fire to say this guy should be an NFL coach or this guy should be the next coach at a bigger, better opportunity in college.
Yeah, I it has to be, right? Like it's got to be something that people are, and maybe two teams are just rushing to, hey, we need the next Sean McVay. He's, you know, 31 years old. We need that next guy, and maybe that's him.
You hit it. That's what everybody's looking for.
Yeah.
That's the new standard, the gold standard that everybody's looking for is you want the next Lincoln Riley in college, and you want to be the next Sean McVay in the pro game. And that's why everybody is looking for what's the next big thing offensively. What's the things that's why they're saying Romeo, it may have already passed him by, and this is his swan song, because Romeo's old school defense, and with all these newfangled offenses coming in, he's just not experienced like he was with the old game.
You buy into that?
I kind of do. I mean, he had a lot of resources this year. Obviously, the secondary was weak, but it seemed like he didn't grasp all the control he had either way, or he wasn't making the calls that he once made in terms of the aggressive behavior. And I think a lot of that was he was kind of back on his heels because he wasn't used to seeing kind of the full attack mode at all times that offenses were coming at him with.
I feel like people grossly not underestimate, but did not give him enough credit for the defense this year. I think because of the way this is a team that won 9 games in a row. Now, I realize some luck was involved and this, that, and the other, but they were tied for 4th in the league in points allowed. They gave up 19.8 a game. That was 4th best in the NFL along with Jacksonville. I don't know why people are hating on Romeo Crennel.
He's targeted right now, too.
This is not like this was, you know, Oakland or one of these, you know, terrible teams that were giving up 30 points a game. They gave up less than 20. There are only 3 other teams that can say that.
So you're seeing because he put the Band-Aids where they needed to be in terms of covering up the weaknesses and keeping it together when they had all the injuries they had, that he should get more credit.
Well, I mean, look what they did the year before with the injuries, and they did nothing. And Mike Vrabel got a head coaching job off of it, and that defense was terrible. It took a big step back, and you can blame the injuries and not having Watt and Merciless and all that. That's fine. But at the end of the day, Romeo Crennel's defenses have always been a bend but don't break. They're going to look like they give up a lot of yardage, and they do. And they do. And this is an old-ass secondary. But at the end of the day, they won 11 games as a football team, which they haven't done in forever, and they were giving up less than 20 points a game. I don't think Romeo Crennel is – should you be grooming somebody? Maybe so. You should be looking.
You understand what
I'm saying.
I'd
bring him back.
In terms of the fact that just a lot of the newfangled offenses and stuff like that and the way the season ended, he's going to be in the crosshairs.
Sure.
Because everybody's – only criticism of the Texans going to the offseason is Bill O'Brien's got to give up play calling. They got to get an OC. But based on what happened against the Colts, now it's suddenly they got to get both 2 new coordinators and Romeo's got to go.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, but
cool. Yeah. All right, so there's hour number 1 of the big show. We've still got 2 hours to go. We've still got plenty more to get to, and if there's something you guys want to talk about, give us a call. 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line, call, text, or you can hit us up on Twitter. I want to tell you right now about Parsons Golf. I'm telling you about PXG clubs. They are the best out there right now, and they have some absolute geniuses in the golf business that have gotten together and put together a golf club that is better than anything that you can find out on the market today. And don't take it just from me. If you look at the fact that if you're a golfer, what's the things you want to do? You want to lower your scores, have more fun, and really get the most out of every time you go and grab the golf clubs and go and swing the clubs. Well, this is what PXG has created for you. They have an engineered club that has a higher launch angle. It'll fly farther. It'll feel softer. It's more forgiving, and it's accurate. It's the best club you're going to put in your bag, simply put. And the reviewers say the same thing. They talk about them being absolutely remarkable and the best club out there and undeniably better than anything else. PXG customers call them insanely good and constantly are talking about how they live up to the hype. And the hype can only be judged by if the best of the best are playing them. PXG clubs have won on every tour around the globe and even won a college national championship. Everyone is switching to PXG. So if you're waiting, I don't know what you're waiting for. Step up your game and enjoy golf more than ever and schedule your fitting at the Club of Carlton Woods right here in the Woodlands and check out PXG Golf Clubs. 844-PLAY-PXG, where you can also set up an appointment or check out PXG.com and book your custom fitting. PXG, nobody does golf clubs the way we do, period.
ESPN 97.5.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.